Jim Sperry, it's Monday, February 27th, 2012. I'm at Camp Edinburgh, commonly known as Eddie, with Sergeant Jason Bowen. Jason, just tell me your name for the record.
It's Staff Sergeant Jason Bowen from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Jason, how old are you? And is it all right to call you Jason?
Yeah, that's fine. 39. I'll be 40 here in a couple of months.
Now, you have a bit of a history of prior service. Tell me a little bit about where you were before you were in the New Mexico National Guard.
I was active duty in the Navy for about 10 years, took about a 7-year break, and then joined the New Mexico Army Guard.
So you joined at a young age in the Navy?
Yeah, right out of high school.
And stayed in 10 years, and then what'd you do in between Navy and joining New Mexico Guard?
I became an electrician, kind of bounced around between different jobs, moved back to New Mexico to be closer to my family, and went full-time guard about 2 years ago.
What prompted that decision to go full-time guard?
We had heard we were getting deployed, and I wanted to get spun up more on the aircraft, more on the administrative side, and just be a better crew chief once we deployed.
Let's talk about your job as a crew chief. Briefly tell us what's involved with that and why you chose being a crew chief.
I originally came in as an electrician, and some stuff transpired, so I ended up having to reclass to be a crew chief. It was a flying position. I took that basically based on the adventure of flying, I guess. And as I learned more about the job, kind of realized that this is what I wanted to do. Just got back in the Guard simply because I missed being in uniform.
So you just felt the desire to continue serving?
I did. Once I got out, I missed it more than I actually thought I would. I thought life would be a lot better on the outside, but I really missed being in uniform, really missed just being around the guys.
I know you've deployed before. I think you were overseas to Kosovo before, is that correct?
No, I was. All my deployments have been in the Navy, so I've been all over the world. This is actually, if you count my Navy deployments, this will be my 9th deployment.
So you've been away from home for a bit. Let's talk about this particular deployment. Briefly compare it to the others. What's different about this deployment here, and specifically here at Camp Edinburgh? Oh, I'm sorry, FOB Edinburgh.
You're a lot more hands-on here. In the Navy, our deployments were six to eight months. You sent the aircraft off. They did what they had to do. You came back, and you did your maintenance on them, and you're basically deployed living conditions. Here, you're extremely hands-on. You go out with the aircraft. You have hands-on with all the casualties. You're on call 24/7, basically. Once the aircraft gets back, you're still responsible for all the maintenance that goes into these things. So it's kind of hard shifting hats from going on a real hectic mission to coming back and then having to pull a daily or having to pull an aircraft wash or whatever maintenance is due on the aircraft.
For the audience that isn't aware of what actually goes on a mission, let's just talk briefly about an example of a mission here in the war zone, a life-saving mission.
Your typical mission is we'll be sitting here. We carry radios. We're on a 4-day rotation where we're on call. We'll be going through our normal daily routine, whether that's maintenance or, you know, maybe watching TV if you have the time or whatever. The call will come in through our operations. We run out to the aircraft, get the aircraft spun up. We've been averaging about 7 minutes from the time the call gets in to the time we're wheels up. The flight to the POI, or the point of injury, usually very short since we're pretty much right in the middle of the all the action right here. We spend that time trying to get in contact with the ground forces, trying to get our game plan together about how we're going to land, where the bad guys are, if there are any, and basically our plan of action once we get on the ground. Once we land, we get the casualty on as soon as we can. If it's somebody other than a NATO force, we basically conduct a real quick search. The Marines are really good about searching the patients as they come on. Then we, as soon as we get clear of the LZ, we go to work on the patient, whatever that entails. We've dealt with everything from massive traumas to insect bites out here, basically. Once we get them back to the facility that they're designated, if they're trauma, we go to what we call a roll three, which Edinburgh is a roll three, so we try to get them back here as quickly as we can.
A start to finish time in all this is, say, a half hour or so from the time you get the call to the time you get the casualty to the time you get back to Edinburgh. Would that be fair to say, about a half hour, give or take?
Yeah, most of them are pretty short just because they're, like I said, we're right in the middle of the bad guy area, so the flights are incredibly short.
That's an eternity for 30 minutes long of things going on.
When there's a massive trauma, that's a long time.
Let's talk about one particular mission that you and I have talked earlier about just a little bit. You call it a hoist mission. It was a very tricky situation. Tell us a little bit about what went on with this particular mission.
We got the call for a Cat Alpha Marine, which is the most drastic that you can have. As we were on our way to the point of injury, they asked if we were hoist capable, and all of our aircraft are hoist capable, so we told them yes. We told them we would prefer to land just due to the nature of the injuries to the Marine, and they told us that there was a live IED field. They'd hit several that day in that same field. So they were requesting the hoist asset.
So for the audience, what we're explaining now is you cannot land because you're basically in a minefield, so you're going to hoist the casualty out.
Right. They didn't know where the IEDs or mines, for lack of a better word, to where they were. So it would have put us in a lot of danger to land, much less the Marines on the ground having to get to us.
So you went to work figuring out how to hoist the injured Marine up. Walk us through this.
This is actually something we train on a lot back home. We do a ton of search and rescues for the state, so all the crew chiefs are extremely proficient in the hoist. So when we got the call, it was just basically second nature. We set up for an approach, got my medic hooked up with the equipment that he needed, his aid bag and his SCAD and everything that he needed. We got over the, as we started inserting into the LZ where we were going to actually do the hoist, we have the procedures that we do. So I actually started hoisting my medic down. In my mind, I wanted to get my medic as close to the casualty as possible because we didn't know where any of the other IEDs or mines were. So I wanted to get him as close as possible. I figured that they had searched the immediate area. So when we put him down, I got him probably about 3 feet away from the casualty. I didn't want to get him too close where he landed on him, obviously. Got him down, medic disconnected, and we got out of there so we wouldn't draw attention to our medic, and orbited a little ways off.
While the medic worked on the casualty, correct?
While the medic worked on the casualty, and basically what we call packaging him, the SCED is a foldable litter that actually collapses up like a taquito, for lack of a better word.
So getting ready to be able to bring him up into the helicopter that's going to come back and be airborne right over him, correct?
Right.
And we're going to hold right here. We're going to go to part two. We're going to close this one off for length of time so we can be able to send this. Standby. This is end of part one.